Fantasy freaks and geeks, what's cracking? It's your boy James Coe back with my brand new project, the Sleeper King Football Podcast. Look, I get it, okay? There's a lot of fantasy pods out there, but we're going to keep this one light, 15 to 20 minutes, 4 to 5 times a week. And man, we are going to pack it with all the info you need, season long, weekly projections, and of course, sleepers, sleepers, sleepers. Follow and listen to the Sleeper King Football Podcast on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Of this 3-game set, let's bring in Tony Pente from Orioles Hangout, talk some Orioles baseball. What's going on, Tony?
Hey, guys. How's it going?
Good. Not bad. Not bad at all. Another down start for Corbin Burnes last night. I'm looking at his month of August. His ERA for the month is up to 7.36. Two home runs given up last night. That's five in five games. Where's your concern, if at all, for Corbin Burnes right now?
Yeah, I mean, I do have some concerns. I mean, when it comes down to the way he's pitched, I mean, you know, he was acquired to be the ace of the staff. And when you look at aces, you expect when the pressure gets higher that the aces step up, right? And when you, obviously, we're talking about here it is in a stretch run. There's been some injuries with Eflin going down in the starting rotation. The pressure is kind of ramped up a little bit for him, and you know, the results are what they are. He's kind of wilted, and there's been times where his team has scratched back in and tied the game, and he goes right back out and gives it right back up. And those aren't things that aces are supposed to do for you, right? So, you know, when you see the curveball and you see the movement and the velocity, you know, the stuff is there. He's had some issues with the changeup, you know, for about the last month or so now. And I think that's a big problem for him. But, you know, I don't know. I mean, it's frustrating, I think, from all Oriole fans to see a guy that they thought was going to be that kind of guy who was going to step up when they really needed him most. And so far he hasn't done so. I mean, he has another month to right the ship. If he starts pitching well in September, people will start to forget about what he did in August. But, you know, he's really going to have to right the ship sooner than later.
Hey, Tony, how good is Ohtani? I mean, is he one of one? I mean, that home run that he hit in the first inning last night, I mean, not many people could do that.
He is one of one. I mean, you look at his Statcast information, and he's like 98th percentile in everything. I mean, you know, power, speed, arm, you name it, this guy can do it. And he's just an amazing, amazing player. We're seeing a generational talent, and we're lucky to be able to, you know, watch him play. I mean, obviously we don't want to see him doing well against the Orioles, but, you know, you have to marvel at how good this man is. I mean, he is an amazing player. And, you know, I don't know where he's going to ultimately rank at the end of his career. But right now, you have to say he's got to be one of the most talented players ever to play the game of baseball.
We're talking to Tony Pente from Orioles Hangout. It's Vinny and Haney on 105.7 The Fan. And Tony, last night, Gunnar Henderson picked up his 20th error. The team had three official errors at the end of the game. That's not great at all. But Gunnar specifically, he leads the team with those 20 errors. We know the type of talent he is on both sides of the plate. I feel like that's what makes these errors that much more frustrating.
I think it does. And obviously he's had some, you know, errors on plays that weren't, you know, you generally would think are fairly routine. I mean, last night, the one he came in on, it wasn't super routine, but again, that's one he's going to make, you know, 99 times out of 100. Just so happens he didn't really set his feet well. And again, made a bad throw on it. And it's just, it's a shame because, you know, he bobbled the ball last night, but you know, he's got the talent to do it. There's no doubt. I mean, we've seen him out there. He's got the skills to do it. He's got the best arm to do that as well. So it's a situation where he's going to be fine as it comes around. It's not going to be an issue long term. I mean, he is the shortstop for this in the short term and the long term, because I know there's, you know, some people out there that go, well, what about Holiday? But, you know, again, the more you see Holiday, the more you see the arm strength isn't there. He's got kind of a longer arm swing when it comes to throwing the ball. He's just not a guy I think you want out there every day at shortstop. So I think, you know, they're going to live and die with Gunnar out there, and I think they're going to be fine ultimately.
Would you say, Tony, that because you've seen Holiday a bunch in the minors and stuff, that he's still kind of learning, especially against lefties and stuff, I would say, because he really hadn't hit that many hard balls as of late.
Yeah, I mean, he's definitely still in a learning curve. I mean, you know, there's still some struggles with the off-speed stuff. He certainly struggles against left-handers. You know, he didn't hit left-handers all that well, really, in the minors as well. I mean, he hit a little bit better in AAA this year. But, you know, that's kind of common. I mean, we saw that with Gunnar when he first came up. We saw that Gunnar, when he was in the minors, he had struggles at times hitting left-handers. So, you know, the talent is there. You know, obviously the adjustment to the off speed has been something he has struggled with. You know, those change ups that drop down below him. You know, he's had some issues with them. And then he starts thinking off speed and then kind of burn them up and in on occasion as well. So right now he's just a young hitter. You know, you think about this, if Westberg wasn't hurt, is he even in the major leagues right now? You know, and so really, I think he kind of got pushed up here a little bit too early again, but there really was nobody else they could really bring up, because it was pretty clear the team did not think Connor Norby was going to play second base for them, and they never tried it in the third base, which is where he's playing with Miami right now. So realistically, he was the guy that had to come up, and they're going to have to live and die on how he plays.
Let's get to a positive, Tony, and Ramon Urias. He's been a huge positive for this Orioles lineup here recently. Another good outing for him last night, two RBIs again. And really, you look at it the last couple of weeks, it feels like he's kind of been the guy spearheading this offense that may be here today and gone tomorrow. How big has Urias been for this team that's still searching for consistency?
Yeah, at the plate, no doubt, he's been the guy of late, and he's had some really timely hits. He's gotten, you know, Ramon has always shown if you give him regular bats, he is going to produce offensively. You know, obviously one of the, you know, I know we're trying to stay positive, but one of the downsides of this year has been the defense has fallen off, you know, at third base. I mean, he's one of the worst defensive third basemen. I think he's second or third percentile in outs above average at third base. And this is a guy that 2 years ago was a Gold Glover. So, you know, that's been a problem. You know, he's cost some runs on that side, but, you know, and obviously last night he had the error. But, you know, when it comes to the way he's hitting the ball, you know, yeah, absolutely. He's been the guy when you look at it. It's been the most consistent hitter this team has really had. You know, thankfully, O'Hearn seems to be getting, you know, back into a little bit. You know, obviously Adley is still struggling, you know, terribly. You know, it's been a struggle for this offense, and Urias has definitely certainly been a positive point.
Hey, Tony, anybody in AAA have a big week since we talked to you last week?
Down AAA, I mean, they just moved up Basayo, who hasn't really kind of gotten going, but at least he's there now. He's getting some at bats. Judd Fabian, who is kind of a guy that you look at as maybe a fourth outfielder one day, a very plus defensive outfielder, you know, popped a couple of home runs and then had a couple of bad games of strikeouts, but that's kind of who he is. But, you know, there's nothing jumping out at you right now. Brandon Young continues to throw the ball well down there. He's a guy that's probably next up if they need another pitcher. He's been pitching as a starter. That's probably where his long-term role is, but he's also a guy that maybe at one point they decide to convert over and see if this stuff ticks up a little bit, and maybe he can be a guy that can be a later higher leverage guy in the bullpen.
Tony, great stuff, man. Really appreciate your time this morning. How could people follow you and keep up with your work?
Yeah, absolutely. Come over to OrielsHangout.com. Go to the forums, especially in the minor league board. You'll see a lot of analysis. We have a prospect power rankings that gets updated every week, so you can find the new guys coming on, how they kind of go up and down, and you can follow all that action at OrielsHangout.com.
Tony, appreciate you, man. We'll talk again next week.
Thanks, Tony.
All right, guys. Thanks for having me.
Coming up next here on Vinny and Haney, we'll get to the whip around. We'll check in on the Yankees, see what they did out in D.C. last night. Also, when things are going bad, they're going really bad for the White Sox. Almost had to walk off homer. Almost. That and more next.
Fantasy freaks and geeks. What's cracking? It's your boy, James Kell, back with my brand new project, the Sleeper King Football Podcast. Look, I get it, okay? There's a lot of fantasy pods out there, but we're going to keep this one light, 15 to 20 minutes, 4 to 5 times a week. And man, we are going to pack it with all the info you need. Season long, weekly projections, and of course, sleepers, sleepers, sleepers. Follow and listen to the Sleeper King Football Podcast on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Next here on The Fan.
Vinny and Haney's Whip.
Bro,
brought to you by Box Hill Pizzeria and Crab Cakes, the best crab cakes in Harford County.
1057 The Fan.
And a ball launched high in the air out to left. Go Verdugo going back. There's number one. See you later. Dylan with the launch angle.
Vinny and Haney back on 105.7 The Fan. Cordell Woodland in for Bob Haney here with Vinny Serrato. Quick Draw McGraw behind the glass. Coming up at 11:30, we'll talk some Orioles baseball with Orioles Hall of Famer Mike Bordick, also co-host of Baltimore Baseball Tonight. See what he thinks about the team as they're wrapping up their series out in L.A. with the Dodgers. That audio you just heard, courtesy of Masson. The Nationals, they defeat the Yankees 5-2, doing the Orioles a good service. Too bad the Orioles couldn't pick up the win last night. Would have tied them with the Yankees at the top of the American League East, but they lose, so they're still a game back. But you got to hear Dylan Cruz get his first home run of his career, and it was a bomb. I like what the Nationals are doing. They've got the young boys out there, him, James Wood, CJ Abrams. I like what they're building. We'll see if they can get some big names this offseason. I think they need another big bat or two. Maybe Juan Soto goes back home. Who knows? I doubt it, but I wishful thinking for sure. Definitely get them out of the American League East. And we talked a little bit before the break about the White Sox and how it's just been a horrible year for them, to say the least. They lost their 103rd game of the season last night, but at least they did it in entertaining fashion.
That's in the air left field. That's trouble. Jankowski back! And a magic catch! Oh my goodness, what a grab! He brings the game back!
That audio courtesy of Bally Sports. Travis Jankowski, he robs the home run at the wall. That would have been a game-winning, a walk-off home run, and instead it turns out to be more misery for the Chicago White Sox. The Rangers, they win 4-3 out in Chicago. Elsewhere in the NFL, we saw Tony Jefferson, former Raven. What was he, a scout last year for the Ravens?
I think so.
Or maybe I got to see what his official position was with the team last year. But he ended up getting back on the field. He signs with the Chargers. Goes out there, has a monster preseason. I mean, he was destroyed. What was it, the Cowboys? Was it Trey Lance that was out there throwing interception after interception?
Five of them.
Tony Jefferson got two of them in a half, and he ended up making the team, or so we thought. The Chargers ended up trading for Taylor Heineke, and I guess they needed a roster spot, so Tony Jefferson ends up off the roster, but it does look like they plan to add him to the practice squad. Elsewhere in the NFL, looks like a couple of moving parts as well. You talk about Tony Jefferson thinking he's going to be on the team and then he's not. Well, how about the Bills thinking that they're going to get Louis Seen? I think that's how you pronounce his last name. The safety. He was supposed to go to Buffalo, sign with them, and join their practice squad. Instead, he's joining the Jets and joining their practice squad. He was waived by the Vikings.
I think it's the other way around.
Is it?
He was supposed to go to the Jets.
Oh, yeah, he was initially going to the Jets, right, and he's going to Buffalo instead. So, adds more to that AFC East rivalry.
Yeah, and, you know, are you upset with it if you're Joe Douglas? Yeah, maybe a little bit. You're probably disappointed. You're probably pissed at the agent because what they did, Buffalo paid him more money.
Right.
Bottom line is what they did. And then another big thing that's come out in the last day or so is Rasheen Rice is going to be able to play because the legal process, the league will not do anything till the legal process is over, and that could be a while.
Yep. Out in Cleveland, the Cleveland Browns have restructured Deshaun Watson's contract and have now created $35.8 million in salary cap space. Cleveland converted $44.79 million of Watson's $46 million 2024 base salary into a signing bonus. The move gives them more than $62 million in cap space right now. That's the most in the NFL.
Yeah, then in 25 and 26, his cap numbers are 72.9.
Yeah, so, have fun with that.
Yes. Yes. Deshaun, you better play good, man.
I mean, it's not even enough out there to have the most cap space in the league right now. It probably doesn't do a lot for you. But yeah, I mean, they able to get that restructure done, and this has got to be the year for Deshaun Watson. I mean, if not now, then when?
Yeah, if not, because this is what, year three from Houston?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, because if he doesn't do it this year, Cordell, what you see is what you get.
Yep. Coming up next here on Vinny and Haney, we'll bring in Orioles Hall of Famer Mike Bordick, talk some Orioles baseball with him. How is he feeling about this team? The offense is still as inconsistent as it's been. You look at your ace who hasn't really performed like your ace in the month of August. What does all this mean as we head into September? We'll talk to Mike Bordick about that and more next here on The Fan. Mike Bordick, Mike, what's going on?
Cordell, how are you, man?
Not bad. You see, I got to get the intros ready for you, man. I try to jazz you up when you're coming on here. Not that you need it, but I try to give you that oomph, man. Hopefully, I'm doing it justice. Mike, last night it was tough to watch, honestly. Granted, it was only a 6-4 loss, but a lot of issues defensively last night. Combine that with your ace not having his best stuff, and really, he hasn't had his best stuff for the entire month of August. Which one irked you the most last night? Was it the defensive issues, or was it Burns not having it again?
Oh, boy. You know, I just think defensively, man, the Orioles are having a hard time finding consistency, and especially with Burns pitching. You know, with Burns on the mound, he's like, if there's a little bit of let-up, and now this is surprising, so I'm going to blame both. But if there's any kind of let-up defensively, what happens to Burns? He doesn't take it to the next level to say, I got you, man. I mean, that's what baseball is all about, picking up your teammates, right? And I know it's frustrating. You got a young infield back there. But if there are mistakes, I mean, the veteran guy especially is supposed to be able to remove that, man, put that away, and then make the next pitch. And I might have been seeing things, but it seemed like after the mistakes in the field, he made more mistakes on the plate. I mean, it was unbelievable. That Teoscar Hernandez home run, he gave him three chances to hit a home run, and he got it on the third one. I mean, you're throwing one of the better power hitters in the game, an all-star bat. Three mistake breaking balls on the plate. And you know, when there are no outs or no mistakes or anything like that, he was burying the curveball. Looked really good. But just bad timing for poor location.
Hey, Bordy, we had an interesting caller this morning. You know, somebody asked about the two hitting coaches. You know, have you ever been in this situation, Bordy, where you've had two hitting coaches, you know, because the at-bats, you know, they've struggled for a while now, a lot of these guys. And it's not just one guy, it's all.
Yeah, yeah. Listen, I'm not going to knock these two hitting coaches, but I want to give you a great example. I was a young player, and I was really fortunate to come up with the A's. And they had Rick Burleson was actually their big league hitting coach. I think this was in 1991. And their assistant coach was Reggie Jackson. And we're out there taking early BP at Fenway Park. And Rick Burleson's working me just like every other hitting coach before. Stay inside the ball, hard up the middle. And all of a sudden, Reggie Jackson comes out. He goes, what are you doing? Hit the tin, the green monster's right there. And I was like, oh, my gosh. They see it up. Burleson and Jackson are arguing behind the turtle, and I'm confused. I don't know what to do. It took me a little while to figure it out as an offensive player, that's for sure. But, man, you get too many voices going on, you are going to be messed up as a hitter. And I think we've talked about this before. You know, I love analytics. I think every player wants as much as they can. But I'm telling you, man, if there's too much information, it gets cloudy. And even back when I played, if I thought about stuff too much, I was screwed, man. You got to simplify this game at the highest level. If there's too much going on, I think it can be a little bit confusing. I don't know exactly what their hitting coach's roles are, but you really got to be careful, especially with young players. This stuff snowballs really fast.
We're talking to Mike Bordick, Orioles Hall of Famer, co-host of Baltimore Baseball Tonight. Is Vinny and Haney on 105.7 The Fan. And Mike, kind of sticking with that, Adley, I don't think I've seen Adley struggle for this long to this point in his career. He just, I thought in game one in this series, I thought he took some really good swings. Honestly, some of the best swings I've seen him take in a while. And I didn't get that same feel watching him last night. Are you surprised that Adley hasn't kind of found his groove again?
Yeah, I really am. I just honestly, I never saw this coming. He just looked like such a mature hitter and you know, a flawless college player, and then, you know, works his way through the minor leagues and all of a sudden establishes himself as an all-star offensive performer. And I don't know, man. You wonder what happens. Now, listen, I think we all kind of learn through a major league season that nobody stays 100% healthy. And if there are little injuries banging up players that we don't know about, but a player's just tough anyway, sometimes it throws the rhythm and timing off. If you're not able to, because of an injury, stay on the backside and you start drifting because maybe you got a bruise on your hip or maybe something's wrong with your hand and you just can't fire and you got to start a little sooner, it disrupts everything in the offensive game. We saw it with, Austin Hayes. And I'm telling you, every player has nagging injuries. And I know Adley had the, you know, he's been sitting a lot. I mean, I'm not going to say a lot, but he's had days where I wonder why the heck he's not playing. And I know he had a back flare-up one game, and I know he's been getting just, seems like every time he's behind the plate, he takes one off the body somewhere. So, you know, it could be that, and we might not ever find that out, you know. I mean, maybe the off season or something like that. Adley Rutschman had this injury, and he's going to have to get surgery. It's going to be quick. He'll be ready for spring training, something like that. I don't want to give everybody any bad thoughts. But this is what happens to offensive players. That's why it's so hard to be consistent and hit at the major league level and keep a consistent rhythm and timing. But, man, the Orioles offense needs him. When they were rolling, he and Gunnar were just like the best 1-2 punch in the game. I mean, Soto and Judge were compared to Gunnar and Adley. And Adley's kind of fallen off a little bit, and they need him to find some consistency, obviously, here down the stretch.
Hey, Bordy, what would you tell Gunnar? Because he says he's much more comfortable throwing on the run. And, you know, you've been a Hall of Fame shortstop. So what would your critique or what would your coaching points be to him?
Yeah, well, listen, I think a shortstop has to be able to have the ability to improvise and throw on the run. But this will come with time where he'll know the timing of plays and the ability to get his feet underneath him. I'm not a huge fan of him throwing on the run. I'd like to see him get his foot underneath him, his right foot underneath him, so he has a more balanced throw. I wish he would watch Seager play in Texas. I think they're comparable to their body style. And Seager has had the ability to slow the game down. Now he's played a lot longer, and that's what it's going to take for Gunnar. I think that play last night, I mean, he way over boogied on that. Why are you charging it looked like a pretty much a line drive hard ground ball one hopper or two hopper, and he basically charged it. And I want to give you a little reference here. Remember Martin that was here a couple years ago, an incredible athlete, shortstop? He couldn't slow the game down. The game was just too fast for him. He could never settle under his feet. I think Gunnar has that ability to do that. He's shown it here recently. After he went through that error stretch, he all of a sudden slowed the game down. Well, it got a little quick for him again last night. Maybe the situation, maybe just the raucous house there, but he could have taken maybe a little drop step, stayed back on that. He has an elite arm. He has the ability to play deeper and stay deep. He doesn't have to come and get everything. So definitely work on his clock. This is an ongoing process, man. This could take years. Listen, you never stop learning, right? I just think the learning curve gets a little shorter, that you don't have the highs and lows. Gunnar looks great. He'll be better for all these experiences.
We got a Richie Martin reference right there. It's been a while since we've heard that name here in Baltimore from the good old years, so to speak, I guess. But sticking with Gunnar a little bit, because his offense hasn't been necessarily spectacular either, especially the power numbers. He still finds his way on base more times than not, but he's not giving the team the type of oomph that he gave them in the first half. He's also not batting where he used to bat in the first half of the season. Do you think Gunnar could use a huge boost by going back to the leadoff spot?
Oh, I don't know about that. I do think this is just such a head game, though, and you've got such young players. I mean, Gunnar and Jackson up the middle. I don't think there's been a younger combination that's headed to the postseason. And I'm not going to say that Holiday is going to be the starting second baseman in the postseason. I don't really see that right now. But I mean, it's a young group, man, and they're trying their hardest to try to manage this and appreciate and understand this process and stuff like that. I think defense weighs on young offensive players, man. I just think it's so important at the highest level to have the ability to catch the ball and make outs that if you don't, and if you feel like you let your team down, it is really hard to separate what you do when you step into the batter's box, because all of a sudden, as a young guy, I've got to make up for that error. I need to hit a 3-run home run right now, and things change. So, you know, it's a mental challenge for every one of these young guys. I think I'm enjoying kind of seeing them struggle through this, because I just know it's going to make them better in the long run, and because every player really does. The thing about it is, a lot of us had to do it in the minor leagues to deal with all this. These guys are doing it at the highest level.
Hey, Bordy, you know what's kind of crazy is, like, the mental errors that they had last night. I mean, you talk about three errors, and I told Cordell and Nolan that really there was probably five, you know, because the McCann throw that Otani blocked would have gone into left field, and, you know, that would have scored a couple runs. And to me, one of the biggest plays, and they didn't talk much about it last night on TV, was, you know, the Otani line drive to O'Hearn, because if he just catches it, it's an easy double play. Then they don't get that run. You know, by him dropping it, it puts Otani on first, and then he ends up going around the bases.
Yeah. No doubt about it, man. I mean, golly, you can go through the annals of the history of baseball, and if you give teams extra opportunities, the opposing team will take advantage of it. I just feel like it's probably an unbelievable percentage. You know, give teams, and I'm not talking like what you're saying, not errors, but plays that should be made, double plays that should be turned, that next thing you know, it's a 3-run inning. I mean, how many times have we seen that recently with Corbin Burnes on the mound? The Orioles have had a hard time turning double plays. So, yeah, all these things that happen through the course of a ball game, man, the best games are 27 balls hit and 27 outs, man, but extra stuff hurts every team, and it comes with maturity, it comes with understanding the game, it just comes with I don't want to say better focus, it's just experience, you know, and the importance of every out and the importance of eyes behind the ball and seeing the ball I'm kind of a fundamentally sound guy, but you need that at the highest levels in order to be successful.
Last thing for you, Mike, on a positive note, the bullpen comes out, shuts it down pretty much after Burnes' rough night. It's really kind of been a pretty decent outing for the bullpen here down this recent stretch. Any new optimism about this group that honestly is probably still going to be inconsistent down the stretch of the season, but it looks like we're kind of in a good spell right now.
Yeah, and hey, we got to take what we can get.
Yeah,
and I'm telling you that seriously. So here we are, a 500 team at the last 2 months. And fortunately, the rest of the league is a 500 team for the last 2 months. And the Orioles, like other teams, have got to keep their heads above water. And I think the Orioles have been doing that with all these injuries. And the hope is that the timing is right for the arms to come back, Westberg to come back. They get healthier in the bullpen with Coulombe, and it ignites them again. And just they feel like a rebirth at the end of the season. Listen, I'm hoping for that. Do I still believe in this team if nobody comes back? Absolutely, man. I do think they have it in them. But to have an extra couple arms, you know, to stabilize the rotation and to have Coulombe out there to help stabilize that bullpen makes us look a whole lot different.
Mike, really appreciate your time, man. Good stuff. As always, we'll talk again next week.
Thanks, Bordy.
All right. Thanks, guys. Good talking with you.
Yep. Coming up next here on Vinny and Haney, we'll take a trip through the fun house, see what you guys are talking about on the text line at 12 o'clock. We'll get you some news from the Nest. We'll hear some of that audio from GM Eric DaCosta's press conference this morning. That's next here on The Fan.
Quick draws, fun house. The rudeness, tuneness text reader.
Who's the fastest gun alive?
This side of the Chesapeake.
I like that quick draw.
105.7 The Fan.
All right, let's start with the Orioles here. First texter says, last night was just a reminder that this team isn't turning things around anytime soon. They can't get out of their own way with the defensive mistakes, and your supposed best pitcher looks like a mess when the lights are brightest.
I mean, look, it was definitely tough moments to watch. Obviously, the furthest thing from clean baseball was played last night. But in a way, I mean, I'm kind of looking at this optimistically so far in this series. I think the Dodgers are kind of especially right now where they've gotten a lot of their pitchers back. I mean, you look outside of Bobby Miller, who's going for them tonight, pretty much all of their starting pitchers are studs. I think the Orioles kind of going out there and beating them in game one really could have won last night if they played any type of clean baseball. I think it's in a way showing that they can beat these types of teams, in a way showing what it could look like once they start to clean things up a bit. But yeah, I mean, there were a lot of low lights last night, but in a way, I'm kind of looking at it glass half full.
Another one here. There was a roster move yesterday. Dylan Tate was designated for assignment. This texter says, I think the writing was on the wall for Dylan Tate when he wasn't getting any opportunities while the rest of the bullpen was struggling. It was all hands on deck for a few weeks there, and he was still being held back.
Yeah, it hasn't been a great year for Dylan Tate. I thought he'd be a key component of this bullpen this year, especially with pretty much not being able to be involved at all last year. I thought if he was healthy, he'd be one of the bullpen's bright spots. He was anything but that when he was up here. Like the texter said, even when he was here, they weren't really going to him. He gets sent down, and he's kind of just been buried on the depth chart for a while.
Few on the Ravens. This texter says, very happy right now with the secondary depth on paper. There will probably be more injuries throughout the season, but it is nice to start as close to 100% healthy as possible, unlike last year where they started with Marlon Humphrey out.
Yeah, no doubt about it. And Marlon's totally healthy. The only one they got down is Mallett, and that's only going to be for a month, but they are fast and they're deep.
And one final one on the Ravens. Texter says, nice to see Kadir Ishmael make the practice squad after so many positive reports this summer. Does he strike you as a guy who could be on a 53-man roster within the next few years?
The next few years? Yeah, what he needs to do, needs to get bigger and stronger, because he's been a wide receiver. He's been a quarterback in high school, wide receiver in college, and his body is more like a wide receiver. His speed's more like a tight end. So if he can add a little more bulk, help his blocking and stuff, yeah, I think he's definitely a guy who could be on a 53. He showed it in practice. Cordell, I said this about him. I thought he practiced much better than he played in the preseason. He played in the preseason kind of like he was afraid not to make a mistake. Like he was catching it, body catching to make sure he caught it. He was catching it and being on the ground. Whereas you saw him in training camp practice, he was stiff-arming people, running, making plays. He just looked a lot better in the practices than he did in the games, and that'll come.
And I think also in some of the games, I remember a play specifically in the Green Bay game, there was a play where it looked like, because like you said, he has shown the ability to get some yak. Yep. In practice,
no,
and that's what I wanted to see show up in the games, and it looked like there was a moment on a hitch route in the Green Bay game where he had the space to be able to do it, but the ball was so poorly thrown, he's got to go all the way down to the ground to be able to scoop catch it. And it's like, can the kid get an opportunity? But I definitely, you look at the people throughout camp from the start to the finish, and who, if you're trying to figure out who kind of matured as camp went on, who got better as camp went on, his name would be a part of that group for sure.
Yeah. Well, you noticed 83.
Mm-hmm. Coming up next here on Vinny and Haney, we'll get you the news from the Nest GM, Eric DaCosta. He spoke to the media earlier this morning about this 53-man roster. We'll hear what he had to say about this pass rush, this offensive line. What is he seeing different from Lamar Jackson this time around? We'll talk about that and hear from Eric DaCosta next here on The Fan.
Trying to figure out what to eat for dinner yet again? With Norsides and bouillon as your not-so-secret ingredient, you can skip the drive-thru and do dinner at home. Nor Taste Combos provide a menu of delicious, affordable, and well-balanced meals that you can prepare in 30 minutes or less. Visit nor.com to get quick and easy recipe ideas for your home-cooked weeknight dinners. It's not fast food, but it's so good.
Fantasy freaks and geeks, what's cracking? It's your boy James Kell back with my brand new project, the Sleeper King Football Podcast. Look, I get it, okay? There's a lot of fantasy pods out there, but we're going to keep this one light, 15 to 20 minutes, 4 to 5 times a week. And man, we are going to pack it with all the info you need, season long, weekly projections, and of course, sleepers, sleepers, sleepers. Follow and listen to the Sleeper King Football Podcast on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.